But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shodell, and I'm here with co-host, friend, and producer Stu Schreger. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. It's getting warm out. It's nice.
It is. It is. I actually just flew in from West Palm,
and your arms must be exhausted.
I am. Yeah. It was a strenuous flight.
It's a long flight.
But my goodness, the weather was 85 degrees every day down there.
I love it. I love it. That's why people my age go to Florida. It's the weather. It's, you know, it's nothing else. You know, it's nice down there.
I'm confused though if I could do it 12 months out of the year. You know. Again, when I'm down there, I do some work in the morning. Enjoy the rest of the day, do some nice dining.
Yeah.
But, you know, the allure of sitting out at the pool or whatever, again, I love it.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you don't do that every day when you're, you know.
I would miss fall. You know what I mean? I could pass on winter. You know, spring, summer, fall, that's, for me, I love the seasons. I'm probably more of a Carolina guy than a Florida guy because you do taste a little bit of that flavor, you know, with the weather in the Carolinas. It's not quite as south.
Gotcha. Did a lot of dining. Going to talk to you about a lot of questions and comments on
me too.
Food.
Yeah.
You just got back recently from
I did.
Florida too.
Yeah. I've been out. Well, I got off. My last day at the club was January 12th, and I just went back last Monday. So I've eaten out every night since January 12th. And not only am I broke, I've got some inspiration. I've been in some really cool places. You know, I was my roommate from college, Mark Walters, invited me to a wine tasting in the city last week. It was called James Suckling. James Suckling is a critic for the Wine Spectator. Or I don't know if he still is, but he was for years. And he does this big Wines of the World tasting where there are probably 150 tables, 150 vineyards there. And it was in the Glasshouse building. I don't know if you've ever been there, over by way on the west side on 12th, I guess it is,
no.
By Javits Center. Yeah. And a really cool venue. Anyway, you know, you get to taste the 150 vineyards wines, and each vineyard had a couple of wines there. So, I mean, obviously I didn't get to all of them. I just kind of cherry-picked the ones that I wanted to check out. And it was great. So afterwards, we went to Milos. Have you ever been to Milos in the city?
No, on good. My bucket list.
Yeah, it's a great. They have two locations, one in Hudson Yards, which is where I went, and then one, I guess it's uptown in the 50s, I want to say, maybe. But really well-done Greek restaurant. You know, they have the whole, you know, they're all kind of the same. You have the, you know, the fresh fish display on the ice out there. And yeah, we had a bunch of appetizers and a great Greek wine called, the grape is called Malagousia, M-A-L-A-Gousia, G-O-U-S-I-A, I think it is. And really great grape, a lot of fun. I'm trying to think of what we had. You know, we ordered the chips, which is, you know, the zucchini chips, which is kind of de rigueur in Greek restaurants. And had a bunch of, you know, apps, and it was just, you know, we were sitting at a window table. It's on the sixth floor in this building in Hudson Yards, fifth or sixth floor, I guess it is. And, you know, the view of the city is just beautiful. You see the Hudson River, a bunch of buildings. Just kind of romantic, fun place, you know. And then the following night, I met a friend of mine at Casa Lever. Have you ever been?
No.
Geez, Stu, you got to get out more, you know. This is two no's in a row here. So, excuse me. Anyway, Casa Lever, it used to be the Lever House. And it's in the, I think it's 53rd and I want to say 6th, between 53rd, between 6th and 7th, or 5th and 6th, I don't remember. Anyway, beautiful place. They changed it into an Italian restaurant. And these people, they own a bunch. They own like 20, 24 restaurants all over the world. I don't remember the names of the others, but I got to tell you, my friend brought two bottles of wine. He brought a 2013 Pollini Monrachet. And he brought a 2006 Barbaresco, which was just magnificent. And then I had a box of Riesling, and he had some white Rhone wine. It was mostly Marsan. The grape was Marsan. But we decided to do a little tasting menu, you know, just pick off the menu and share. So he was really amped up about this minestrone soup, which I would have never ordered, really. To me, it's not all that exciting. But it was different. It was pureed green, like there was like pureed parsley in it or something. It was bright green. And most minestrones that I've had are red. You know, there's tomato base in there. But this was an herb base, and it was really, really good and interesting. And then the second course, we had these shrimp that were kind of tempura fried and had a really interesting, like, horseradish creamy kind of sauce to it, which was delicious, actually. And then the next course we had, because we each picked, right? He picked one, I picked one, and then he picked the next one. He wanted the risotto. And the risotto was Parmesan with sour butter and a pan-seared diver scallop on top. And it was textbook risotto. You know, the problem with a lot of risottos is they get overcooked, you know, because people cook them ahead of time and then bring them back, which is fine. But, you know, you got to make sure that the rice is a little on the medium rare side before you, you know, do that. So when you reheat it, it doesn't get all mushy. And it was textbook perfect. It was really good. And then the last course I got to pick was skate. And I love skate.
I love skate.
Anytime I see it, I always order it. And it was simply prepared. It had a Hokkaido scallop, a Hokkaido turnip on it with a little spinach and maybe I think it was a little brown butter on it. It was light and just what we needed. And we were going to go for the duck after that, but at some point you just run out of room. You know what I mean? I can't eat anymore. I can't drink anymore. It was just you get the maximum density. But I got to tell you, I can't recommend those two restaurants enough. They're both fabulous. They're both on the higher end. You know, you're going to need some funds. It's not cheap, but well worth it. I didn't feel any lack of value there. And yeah, again, like I said, I couldn't recommend them highly enough. They were just fabulous. And then I went to, I went to see Joe Bonamassa last week at the music fair.
Friday night at...
I call it the music fair. It's the Flagstar Theater or whatever.
It's actually Flagstar at Westbury Music Fair. So they sort of use Westbury Music Fair again.
Yeah. So I was telling Mike, the first concert I ever went to was The Who there, you know. And my mother and my aunt were partying, and they forgot to pick us up. We were like 13. I had to walk home from there. You know? So I was telling them the route I took, you know. Anyway, we parked the car, go there. And, you know, Bonamassa, I'm not wild about his songwriting, honestly. I mean, but his guitar playing is ridiculous. I mean, he's a phenomenal player, you know. And just to go and watch him perform is a, you know, kind of a masterclass. And I always, you know, whenever I watch a guitar player, I'm always stealing some ideas from him, you know. So that was fun, you know. And then, but we went to Morrow's in Carl Place before. My friend what? Joey Morrow, who owns Cardinale Bakery, he opened up this place. It used to be La Bottega in Carl Place on Westbury Avenue. And he changed it. For some reason, he wanted to get into the restaurant business. And I told him, you know, I gave him the same advice that Nelson DeMille gave me when I was going to write a book. You know, take two aspirins, lay in a dark room, and wait for the feeling to pass. You know. And anyway, he didn't listen to me. And he opened up this place. And his brother, Augie, runs it. I don't know if you ever met Augie. He's always at these fundraisers with the bread and all that. Anyway, Augie's the size of Rhode Island. Big dude. Fun guy. Great host. You know, he's on it all the time. He's going from table to table, talking to people, making drinks, whatever. But their food is really good. It's simple Italian food. It's nothing that you're going to go, oh, my God, I've never seen anything like that before, like if you go to Marea or something, you know. But it's done so well. I mean, I had this branzino that was like kind of a Livernese style, you know, which is in tomato.
Oh,
with
I love that. Olives and capers.
It was really good. And I was with Mike Dorio. Mike had lamb chops, and they were great. You know, they're both suggestions from the owner. You know, he says, you should have this, you should have that. And I'm always that guy. You know, tell the chef to pick something. I don't care. You know, tell the manager to pick something. I'd almost rather be surprised because I've eaten in so many restaurants and have so many meals. It's like, I don't really care what I eat as long as it's not chicken liver. You know, if there's no chicken liver on a menu, pick something. I don't care what it is, and I'll eat it. So he suggested those two. We had it. I couldn't have been happier. It was just phenomenal.
Sounds like you've been having quite the dining...
I could go on for 2 hours here, you know. I mean, I was like I said, I've been out, literally, been out every night to dinner since January 13th.
Gotcha. So I have some questions for you based on some dining opportunities this past week.
Make them easy. I'm in my 70s.
There you go. So... First of all, Cuban sandwiches, were they the original, like, panini? Because it's usually, like, the so-called Cuban sandwich is ham with cheese and a baguette and press.
It's roast pork, ham, cheese, and,
So
mustard, pickles.
I mean, was that the first
It could have been the Panini forerunner. Yeah, I mean, you know, if you think about it, you know, the yeah, I mean, Panini's just a press sandwich, so literally.
I remember when I used to go to Puerto Rico with my parents, we used to get pan y mantequilla, which I think is
bread and butter.
And yeah. Again, it's the same thing. It's put on a press, and it's delicious. And then as part of that, my friend brought back some Cuban coffee, which is just very, very rich, I guess would be the way you describe it.
Yeah, I love the taste of that stuff, like the Greek coffees and the Cuban coffees, I like the really dark roast thing, but I need two books, you know, because I had one the other night. I had an espresso, I'm trying to think of where it was, and I was up at 3 a.m. reading. I can't tolerate the caffeine. It's crazy.
Wow. So now another thing that's been eluding my memory. I have to say it's probably an Italian dish, but it's like a balloon or a sack filled with cheese.
Il sacchetto.
Okay, sacchetto.
Il sacchetto. Yeah, it's a little like a pasta dumpling.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had that, which was incredible.
Yeah, it's like a ravioli with a different shape.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, and then there was one of the restaurants we went to, could it be a burrata ravioli or something?
Yeah, sure. You can put burrata in ravioli.
So that was interesting. But that brings up the whole discussion of Italian cuisine.
My favorite.
And how did, the craziest thing, like, you know, how did somebody, just think back to cavemen. I'm really, my mind is spaced out. How did somebody decide to take flour or whatever it to make pasta?
You know, I think I always, you know, tag it back to grandma's, man. You know, I mean, it's like somewhere along the line you had to eat, right? You were hungry. So you're trying to figure out what to do. And you know, you look around and what do we have? We have animals I can kill. I got grains I can, you know, use. I have vegetables I can grow. And I think that's how it all starts.
Well, I mean, again, I must be kind of crazy, but you know.
You know where pasta originated?
No.
China.
Okay.
Yeah. Chinese brought it over and the Italians stole it.
But just think back, you know, to the cavemen again. You know, they're busy doing their thing. Somebody decided to make spaghetti. And then how did they decide? Because when you think of pasta, I believe if you did like the Family Feud thing, you know, the number one choice or answer would be a tomato sauce.
Sure, probably.
So, like, who decided that, like, oh, wow, there's these tomatoes laying around. Let's,
Well, I think they were going bad, and somebody said, we got to do something with them, you know, so let's cook them, and, you know.
So then think about the evolution of a restaurant. Mm-hmm. So everybody's hanging out in their caves.
They're bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, and then, you know, again, it was like that was a house, a home in the day. And then somebody got wise and said, wow, you know, my mate's cooking is so good. We're going to open up a restaurant so you don't have to eat at home. You know, you can go somewhere to eat. And just think about that. I mean, you know, it just.
The evolution of the restaurants were for the horsemen years ago. The guys that were, you know, going probably pre-Pony Express or whatever, you know, and bringing
so you had
things.
Food, brothels, and bars.
And somebody said, well, yeah, you know, you had a house and the woman would feed these guys and, you know, that's how it all started, you know. It's really kind of, I mean, when I go back to the caveman, you know, what I always think about, like, the first caveman's wife must have been a real pain. Because if you're willing to go out and smack a dragon in the head with a club instead of staying in a cave with a nice warm fire and Mrs. Caveman, she's gotta be some nightmare.
So going back to this evolution of pasta. So, okay, somebody came up with pasta. Now, there's 400 shapes of pasta.
Right.
So, like, I went to a really nice restaurant in West Palm, and I had a bucatini with bolognese.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been paired with anything. I'm led to believe that if you do an angel hair or whatever, probably not the way to go.
Right.
But how did somebody decide that, you know, you got spaghetti, we're going to make a, lack of a better description, a straw-shaped spaghetti.
Right.
And then there's all sorts of soup pastas, mm-hmm. which are like bucatelli that are chopped up and put into soups and stuff.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, I think it starts with you know, usage and need. You know, you need to eat and you got to use it. So, you know, how do we do this? I mean, I got a soup here. I have to nurture my family. I have to make something nutritious. I got to feed them. I got to fill them. So, you know, we have a soup. I'll put a boil. What am I going to put in? I'll put a potato in it. I'll fill them up. I got some pasta left over. Let me cut that up and I'll put that in there. And then, you know, oh, there's some beans. All right, I get some beans left over from the other night. And I think that's how it starts. I mean, I haven't researched it, quite as fully as I probably could, but I'm pretty sure that's how it started. Most of these things develop out of need. If you look at braising, you know, braising is, you know, taking very tough cuts of the animal and trying to make them palatable. And people did that because all the tender cuts were for the elites. And they gave the rest of the stuff to the peasants. Here, you deal with this, you know. Oh, you're not good enough for the other thing. And then the people figured out a way to make it tender and make it, you know, palatable. And I think that's how it all starts. It's like I call it grandma food, like I said before. You know, I picture these women in the kitchen working their magic on all these cuts of meat or, you know, vegetables or however they do it. Up until probably our generation, I mean, women were the drivers of most cuisine, right? I mean, they were the ones that were in the kitchen all the time. Grandma taught the mother taught the daughter, and it just kept going down the line. Now it's, you know, it's open season. Everybody's cooking. Everybody's interested in food. You know, you got all these shows on TV, which are getting sillier and sillier, by the way, you know. All these cooking competition stuff, you know. I was watching one briefly the other night, Culinary Card Game or whatever it's called, and they pick a card and it tells them, you know, they can't use a slicer, everything has to be green. You know, it's so bizarre. I don't know. I was asked to go on Chop Champions, Chop Professionals or whatever it was, filming in California, and frankly I have no interest, because it's just all, it's gotten to the point of it's almost a cartoon now. You know, it's like a game show rather than a real cooking thing. And, you know, I hate to see it go that way. We always seem to eventually, you know, screw things up in that regard. I guess it's, you know, it's sales and it's, you know, viewers and, you know, commercials and all the other economics that go into it. But it's like I was talking to a friend of mine and, you know, she was talking about the Parthenon over in Greece. And I said, you know, we don't have anything like that here. I said, well, we're not 2,000 years old, but if we did, we'd probably put a dome on it and charge $50 to get in, you know. It's just that we seem to kind of commercialize everything. And it's kind of sad because I remember when Food TV first started, and I'm probably in the minority of this, but it was educational. I mean, you know, people were doing, you know, Mario Batali, love him or hate him. He's kind of a reviled character now. But, you know, he was cooking in real time. I mean, he was doing some stuff that was interesting, as were most of the guys there. And now it's all, you know, applause and, you know, and silliness and whatever. So anyway, that's my speech, too.
So another place that I, today's world, the kids are all about Instagram and influencers.
Yeah.
So there's something called Poppin' Bagels or Pop-Up Bagels.
I don't know.
It's a thing, and it's not so famous and... But not so famous, but known. But they were very soft, puffy type bagels, and you order a smear to go with it. And they had anything from traditional scallion cream cheese. My memory fails me, but
a smear in Florida is a schmear up here, right?
Yeah, it's a schmear.
Schmear, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's what they call it. That's their gimmick, schmear.
Schmear.
So they had anything from scallion cream cheese to. My memory fails me, but I don't remember if it was a marinara schmear or an a la vodka. And I'm really intrigued. I didn't do my research yet. I didn't get that. We got scattered.
Yeah, I would pass on that myself.
But I didn't know if it was a dip or it was actually like a, you know, like you had strawberry cream cheese. Mm-hmm. This was marinara. I haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah.
But... again, very, very trendy. The bagels were like clouds.
Really,
they were good, but I didn't. You know, I
like the crunch on the outside. I like a little bit of a, you know.
Yes, I like a well done bagel.
Yeah,
But again, the kids, all they want to do is this stuff. And apparently there's one in Roslyn.
Oh, yeah?
I guess the Roslyn Village. So the other thing is we went to, and this is no different than here on Long Island, but we went to an Asian, let's call it fusion restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm confused, and I don't know history. I don't know origins, but a lot of Chinese takeout restaurants, fusion, have Thai
pad Thai.
Thai pie.
Yeah, Thai pie.
Pie.
You got, now he's got me saying tadpole. No, pad Thai.
Pad Thai.
Yeah.
So, like, I thought that was almost Indian.
No.
I must be all wrong.
Yeah,
but
you're all wrong. It's Thai.
So it's Thai food.
Yes.
Okay, so Thai is Asian.
Yeah, it's not T-I-E like you wear. It's T-H-I like it, gotcha. The place.
So, yeah, it was interesting because some people were getting rolls.
Uh-huh.
You know, other people were getting pad Thai.
And this was a takeout place?
Dine-in.
Oh, okay.
Dine-in. But it's funny. I had the conversation when we were at dinner. You know, I don't remember sushi growing up.
Well, sushi didn't hit hard until the 80s.
Right. So I remember being married. I got married, I guess, in 79.
Uh-huh.
And dining in.
Happiest day of your life?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I got the best kids.
Yeah, you do.
But I guess we dined in Glen Cove. I don't know how we ended up, you know, experimenting or whatever. Mm-hmm. And for all I know, you know, we got wonton soup or something because we were so, you know.
Inexperienced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, it comes to mind that, you know, sushi was like, just like you said, in the 80s. As this crazy, crazy thought, and I'm full of pondering today.
You're a ponderer.
When we were young, so I remember when I was like 13 or so that I found out what yogurt was. Is mm-hmm. that because it just came about as far as packaged food? I mean, like, did Dannon start distributing around that time?
I guess so. I mean, I haven't pondered that thought, but, you know, yeah, maybe, you know, I don't know. But yogurt's been around forever. I mean, you know, they've been eating yogurt in the Middle East for 2,000 years.
But I don't,
you know,
remember it as a, you know, again, a...
Well, it wasn't big on a diet plan. You got to remember that food really didn't explode until the 80s. You know, I mean, it was kind of like, you know, steakhouses were the only real restaurants. You know, you had steak and fish. You go to John Peel Room.
And do you remember the only way you got orange juice was going to the freezer section,
yeah,
and getting like
a little tube.
A tube of frozen, yeah, orange juice.
Yeah, you remember milk machines? They used to have milk machines at the gas station where you go and you put like a 50 cents in there and it gave you a quart of milk. You know, they were refrigerated, whatever. I used to go, my mother used to send me down to the gas station to get milk.
That's pretty funny because my mom didn't send me to what I went down to the gas station for.
Well, they didn't peddle that when I was younger. Yeah, it was a completely different time, you know,
so,
food-wise anyway.
So when we were down in West Palm, apparently President Trump was there.
Uh-oh.
So all the roads were closed and everything.
Yeah.
But we went down to Lake Worth Beach, which, again, I'm definitely ignorant on geography.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that, I guess, Lake Worth is a little bit south of Palm Beach, which is where Mar-a-Lago is.
Okay.
So we had Kerry's daughter and her boyfriend down there, so she wanted to just give him some scenery. So first of all, we went to the beach at Lake Worth, which is the coolest experience because there's a bar restaurant called Benny's on the Beach,
mm-hmm,
which is essentially a pier that goes out from the beach far into the water.
Yeah.
But there's a bar and then there's the restaurant. And at the bar, they're known for interesting drinks. Most well-known, I believe, is the pineapple scooped out and served as a pina colada.
No.
That's a... It looks so cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny to see everybody walking around
with a pineapple.
And I just wonder, you know, like, did somebody have to Google scooped out pineapples for them to be able to have the amount of pineapples they need to serve their drinks?
Well, I'm sure they go through cases. And it got to be expensive, too, because pineapples aren't cheap these days.
Well,
you know?
Drinks weren't cheap either.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It had to be, you know, it had to be.
And you can get a refill. But, like, also, I wonder how long a freshly scooped out pineapple lasts.
Well, it doesn't have to last all that long if you have a drink in it, right? I mean, it's not like they take them back and they put them through the dishwasher.
No. What I meant was they have to have a supply of carbs.
Oh, yeah. They last a while.
Because the worst thing would be seeing, you know, the
brown pineapple.
Right. Because I always remember Mom used to, you know, quarter a pineapple and serve it when she had guests. You know. And then by the end of the week, it was looking a little brown.
Well, you're not supposed to keep it a week. You eat it first, you know, and get it done.
But that was.
Have you ever seen pink pineapples?
Yes, it's Stu Leonard's.
Yeah, they have a whole strain of pineapples that are beautiful, like Miami Vice pink. They're gorgeous.
And is there a different taste?
No, but there's a different price.
Yes.
Yeah, they're much more expensive.
Yes. So, this is an interesting one. So there's one couple that we hang out with, very nice, from Rockville Center, moved down to Florida, and... I guess they made a poor choice of where they would want to land.
Uh-huh.
But yet, this mistake was a financial bonanza.
Really?
So I believe that they were down there for 4 years. So they lived in Rockville Center. They had two cars. They drove down there. They asked us to drive down their other car.
Mm-hmm.
And our friend's wife was so... protective of her shoes, her designer shoes. She hid them in the trunk and didn't tell me that they were there. You know, so like I was going to sell them.
What are you going to do with
it? Along the way,
my Jimmy shoes, half price.
But they bought a house for $650,000, put like $250,000 into it, and then decided that this community wasn't where they wanted to be.
Uh-huh.
So they were living in West Palm, but North West Palm.
Okay.
And again, they put, again, $250,000 into the house or whatever. Mm-hmm. So all I know is they sold it for $1.6 million.
No, there you go.
And Carrie was telling me, like, real estate down
God
there
bless America.
Has, like, doubled.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the other side of it all is, you know, even when we had the housing boom here where properties were selling for incredible amounts.
Sure.
And you say, oh, let me go sell my house.
Yeah, but yeah.
You have to go somewhere.
Yeah, you got to go
pay or something. Know, again, this windfall that they have and, you know, seems to have turned out pretty good. It's amazing because I know if I invested in real estate, it would go south.
Well, you know, it's funny. I bought a house in South Fort Myers. It's got to be, I don't know, 15 years ago, whatever it was. And I read in the paper about... 3 months later that houses in South Fort Myers are escalating faster than any other place in the country. I'm like, well, I wish it was because I was so smart. It was just a dumb luck thing because I had a friend who had a home down there. And her and her husband, you know, talked me into buying one down there to play golf. And I really liked it, but I had it for about 3 or 4 years. And then one day I wanted to go to, it was a 7-Eleven kind of place down the block. It was maybe a mile and a half down the block. I wanted to go get coffee and a paper or whatever. And as I'm going down, it took me almost 45 minutes to get there, like a mile and a half, with all the construction vehicles, right? And they're building everywhere around. And I'm thinking, this reminds me of Miami in the 70s, the boom and bust thing with the condos, you know? I said, let me get out of here because I don't know about this. And sure enough, you know, I think I paid... I want to say $275,000 or something at the time, and I sold it for $450,000. And right now, you could probably buy it for $300,000, you know, or $350,000. Maybe not now because things have gone up a little bit. But the last couple of years, it was. I was smart enough to get out when the getting was good, kind of thing.
So it's interesting. So Carrie's driving around and she's explaining to her daughter that, you know, when you're in a bad neighborhood. When there's pawn shops. Now, I'm not talking about the P-O-R-N.
Yeah, P-A-W.
The
yeah,
P-A-W-M. Yeah. So we're on the way to the airport, and again, there was all sorts of traffic or whatever, and her daughter goes, are we in the ghetto? And Carrie goes, why do you ask? She goes, I saw a pawn store. So she goes, you listen well.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, how you get them mixed up. I remember telling my mother was, she was, I guess, in her 80s or whatever, and she says, you're opening up another restaurant, I just read, you know. You didn't tell me, you know. I said, yeah, you know, it's a tapas bar. She goes, "That's disgusting. I can't believe it." And she starts yelling at me, "What are you talking about?" She thought I said topless. You know? No, it's small plates, not small breasts. You know, it's like ridiculous. You
know? So that's pretty funny. So, and my mom tells me the only reason she knows what's going on in my life is because of Playing with Fire.
Yeah, well.
So this is an interesting one that ties a couple of threads. So when we were at Benny's on the beach, I wanted to get something native, you know, real native.
Stuffed dolphin?
So almost. So I got a mahi-mahi taco.
There you go.
Isn't mahi-mahi dolphin?
No, well, yeah, it's dolphin fish. It's not dolphin mammal, you know.
Okay.
That's probably why they switched the name.
So it was actually very nice. It came on a soft taco. Which
was it grilled or fried?
It was grilled.
Grilled, okay.
It was grilled. Yeah. And again, it was on a soft taco, and this will lead it to another story. But I thought it was really, really good. It's funny, you know. This is just a stupid comment, but the taco came with nice pieces of fish on a bed of coleslaw,
right,
and pickled onions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you get a choice of side dishes.
Right.
So I thought I would need some coleslaw with my mahi-mahi taco.
It's on there already.
But it was already on there.
Yeah.
But what's the deal with pickled red onions that it seems to be all the thing?
Yeah, well, onions have. I'm a big fan of onions, cooked, pickled, fried, smoked, whatever. Raw, not so much. And I know people love them on burgers, and I guess it's okay. To me, it's just, especially the red onions, they have such a strong flavor. You almost have to soak them in water to take some of that acrid flavor out of them. But I think once you caramelize onions, or once you saute them or fry them, you know, you bring out the natural sugars in it.
The serve down there is all, I guess, what you would consider fresh onions that are pickled.
Yeah, no, well, pickling is easy to do. It's just, you know, some water, some vinegar, and some spices.
But I thought it was really, really good.
I use it for short ribs.
Oh.
I use pickled onions on short ribs a lot.
So when you're doing fried fish, because I think Carrie got like a fish and chips type thing,
mm-hmm,
obviously the crust sort of determines the taste of the
Well, it determines the success of it, I think. Not so much the flavor, but the success of the dish. You know, I like fish and chips. I'm English. It's, you know, in my DNA, right? So I use tempura batter whenever I do it. I think it's lighter and a little crisper, and beer batter is kind of heavier and thicker. Some people even do, I guess they do breading and frying it, which is all right, but it's not really traditional. But I think that the worst thing for me is when you get fish and chips and half the batter has fallen off, you know, and you see the white through it, it's got to be covered. And I don't know, I think tempura batter works the best for that. And I think it's the lightest, which also allows the fish to shine. You know, you don't have this heavy batter, this, like, you know, sort of beer laden. And I know that's kind of traditional in England. They have beer battered fish, but I really think the Japanese have figured out that batter thing with the tempura, and it's good for so many other things too. I mean, you know, just the other day I was doing tempura asparagus, because this is the time of year for asparagus between now and probably June, and you know, they're at the height of the season. They're just fabulous, and you know, most people don't, you know, they kind of, you know, they'll grill them or they're, you know, steam them or whatever. But tempura battered asparagus with a nice little dipping sauce, very cool.
So what type of fish is pollock? Because the
pollock's like
the
cod.
Fish and chips that they serve was made with pollock.
Yeah, pollock's like cod. It just looks almost exactly the same. Cod has a white line going through the outside of the skin. When you look at it, you'll see a horizontal line of white through the side of the fish. Pollock has a black one, but they almost look identical, and they taste the same. Pollock's a little bit cheaper than cod for whatever reason, but it's kind of the same thing. I mean, you know, the flavor difference isn't really all that much. I think it's a genus and species thing. I'm not really sure, but I think that if you looked it up, it's probably just a very close cousin or something like that.
Gotcha. So The story goes with these tacos that was interesting to me was we went to dinner and one of our guests ordered tacos. And as I said, the my taco that I was served when I went to the beach was a soft taco.
Right.
And, you know.
I prefer those.
So the menu had tacos. The woman ordered, I forget what type of taco. I guess it's in oh, it's a lobster taco.
Okay.
So all of a sudden she's having problems with it. And I figured maybe it's there's shell in it or something, you know. You can still have shell in it.
Yeah, yeah. If in a, careful.
Know, in
yeah,
a lobster
sure.
roll or whatever.
Sure.
She goes, I didn't order a fried taco.
She got the hard one?
Yeah.
So yeah.
So it started out as a whole big thing, but
you know, tacos to me, it's one of the most fun foods you can play with from a chef's point of view, because the sky's the limit. I think some people take it a little too far, but the bottom line is you can put anything in a taco, and you spice it up with any flavor you want. Is all kinds of chilies.
Well, the dirty taco has proven that.
Yeah, you know, and good for them. I mean, you know, they're obviously successful, and you know, the other thing about tacos is they're fairly profitable, you know, from the restaurant standpoint. You know, they don't cost a lot to put out. So, you know, when your food costs it down, and, you know, you don't have to have a tremendous amount of chef experience to pull them off. So I think that, you know, that's probably the popularity. Now it's a little bit oversaturated. 10 years ago, it was like on the cusp of becoming the new darling of the food world. And now it's, you know, there's taco bars everywhere, and some better than others, obviously. And is, you know, it's, I go, this is, I almost relate this to blues guitar. You have the traditional blues players, the older black guys that, you know, that really just kind of figured it all out. You know, the early forerunners, the Robert Johnsons and the Muddy Waters and Mississippi Slim and all these guys. And then you have the modern players, you know, the guys that have lessons, you know, that have studied guitar, you know, the Bonamassa's and I think Buddy Guy's probably in the other category, but phenomenal players now. And you go back and forth between which one's better, you know, one's more traditional, one's better. It's the same thing with tacos. You know, you have, you know, I have my guys at in my kitchens always kid me, say, you're making gringo tacos, you know, and I'm like, yeah, well, gringo tacos sell, dude, you know. But, you know, the traditional Spanish, you know, they there's an orthodoxy there that they don't want to screw with, you know. And I get it, you know, because I'll you know, do some other things. But they have the, you know, basically the pork, the fish, and the carne asada and the birria, the one that's dipped in jus, you know. And that's pretty much it for them, you know what I mean? I go out on, you know, lobster, and they do fish tacos also, I should say. But, you know, very traditional, you know, usually with pico de gallo or something like that on there, and maybe a little salsa, whatever, some spicy salsa. But, you know, we go other places, you know, which I think is fun, you know. And for me, it's a great vehicle to, this is a dirty little restaurant secret, but every once in a while you have to repurpose things to, you know, you don't want to throw things out, you know, if you have it left over. So a taco is a great vehicle for, you know, selling things. You know, if I have, let's say for argument's sake, I put roast chicken on a menu, because every once in a while somebody asks me for roast chicken. Doesn't sell, right? So I'll put it on the menu, and I end sell, so I got to do something with these chickens. What do? So I'll make a chicken tinga, which is a spicy Mexican chicken, and I'll put that in a taco and sell it, which is perfectly acceptable. I mean, it's good, you know, but you know, you can't throw things out in the kitchen. You know, people don't do it at home and expect us to do it in a restaurant. It's crazy, you know.
All is good. So let's take a break. Again, we want to thank our two sponsors, Smokin' Al's, and Barry Manilow playing his last Long Island concert.
Are we going to do a Barry Manilow song today?
We are.
Okay.
We are. And I promise next week we will announce the winners of the contest so far. So let's take a break. We'll come back with a Barry Manilow song. For our listeners, please write to us at fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. Name the song, and again, we might as well do that homework assignment. You know, what restaurant, if you get to go to Barry Manilow at UBS Arena on April 13th, what restaurant might you stop at along the way to make the complete evening?
just the same as you did last time I touched you. And here I am, close to getting tangled up inside the thought of you. Do you love him as much as I love her? And will that love be strong when old feelings start to stir? Enough to touch those burning memories. And if I hold you for the sake of all those times love made us lose our minds, could I?
Ticketmaster.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Yeah, and we were just talking about tacos, you know, and as much as I love them, another thing I think that a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, We've had a renaissance in a couple of areas of restaurants on Long Island. You know, when Lamani got here, that big Greek restaurant over in Manhasset, and then Kima, and now there's a couple. Plori is another one. Skara, they're all coming to fruition here on Long Island. Most Greek restaurants were the kind of takeout, you know, kind of shish kebab-y, you know, kind of places, right?
Yep.
And it's the same thing with Mexican restaurants. I think that, you know, there's a couple of great Mexican restaurants now that have happened on Long Island and in the city also that kind of they present Mexican food in a very, very high-end manner in places that you would see in Mexico City and stuff. And we're used to, you know, to take out Mexican places and little taco joints or, you know, and I'm not knocking them, they're fine, but, you know, where you get, you know, a chimichanga with a plate of rice, black beans, and, you know, a thing of guacamole and some sour cream. But that's not real fine Mexican cuisine. And once you've researched some of that, like I have, you find that there's this incredible culture of food in Mexico that's just nuts, you know. Tacos are street food, you know, basically, and they're fun. I mean, you know, great. But when you start to really, you know, like Besito was doing that initially, you know, they had a chef, his name was, I believe it was Greg Lake, almost like the guy that, I think that's his name. Anyway, he had left and gone back out west, but he laid the groundwork for Besito, and Besito does some interesting food. There's some, you know, great things there. So if you get a chance and you want to really look at what Mexican food can be, you know, check out some of those restaurants, because it's nothing like you've ever had before as far as Mexican cuisine goes, you know. I just want to get that in because I think they get short shrifted a little bit, and I'd like to help them out.
So I wanted to continue on this adventure of pickled onions.
Oh, pickled onions, yeah.
So down in West Palm, there's a shopping area called City Place. A bunch of different restaurants and clothing stores or whatever. They have an Eataly there. Similar to, I've never been to the one in Manhattan, but quite interesting. You know, you go into this so-called food mall.
Yeah.
And there's a cheesemonger. There's a bakery.
Yeah.
There's a panini place. On and on and on and on. Some bars. You know, really, really interesting. So I have to admit, sometimes my choice is not the general agreed choice. So instead of going to there, I said I wanted to get a nice salad. So instead we ended up, and this is not a critique of the restaurant that I'm going to talk about, but it's called True Food Kitchen.
Yeah, they got one in Roosevelt Field.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
So it's... And if the listeners can only see me with my fingers as a quote,
air quotes,
it's healthy eating.
Yeah, it's an oxymoron.
Right. So I ended up with a teriyaki quinoa bowl.
That sounds healthy to me.
It was about the best I could find, but it was good. It was funny because Carrie mentioned when she shared it with me that it wasn't overly teriyaki sauce. It had a subtle glaze to it, which was really nice.
Essence of teriyaki.
She ended up with some sort of fake burger.
Oh yeah. Have you ever read the ingredients list on Impossible Burgers? It's like motor oil, you know, grease. It's awful. I mean, how anybody eats those things is beyond me.
So she...
I hope they're not sponsoring us.
No. So she shared her burger with me. It was two patties on a brioche and pickled onions.
Yeah.
And thank God for the pickled onions because they...
The only flavor?
Yeah. So again, I'm laughing because, you know, there's Eataly, there's Bellagio. And, you know, they had some nice antipasto, some nice salads.
Nice.
And I ended up with
essence of teriyaki bowl. Good for you. So listen, I've had this idea for a long time. And, you know, ideas are just what they are. But, you know, I've been to Eataly in this city. You know, I've been to the one in Boston. And, you know, Faneuil Hall, you know, Faneuil Hall and Quincy Market in Boston, where you walk through that building and have all those little... shops, or what do you want to call them, booths, I guess, you know, food booths and stuff. I've been looking at the old Sears building on Route 106, 107, across from the mall, for about 10 years now, since I guess Sears is out of there. And I said to myself, there's a place that's the building that I would love to do that in, right? It's like Terminal Market. You ever been to Terminal Market in Philly?
No.
It's the same thing. It's like Faneuil Hall on steroids. It's bigger, you know. But it's like you said, they have, you know, you go to Faneuil Hall, they got a cheese guy, they got a donut guy, a dessert person, a cappuccino place, a lobster place, soups. It's just, it's, you know, fun. It's just fun to walk through there and see all the you know, the sights and the smells. And Terminal Market takes it to a different level. They have a vegetable area, vegetable market there. They have a cheese guy there. They have a butcher, you know. And I'm saying to myself, you know, Long Island's, it's tricky on Long Island because, you know, although we have 2.5 million people, we're spread out, you know. Manhattan has 8 million people concentrated into a small area, you know. So they have a lot of potential customers and they can pull off an Eataly or something like that. I don't know if Long Island would support something that big, you know. I'm sure on Saturday and Sunday it'd be busy and fun. But, you know, Monday and Tuesday, you know, is tough. You know, you look at some of these the markets that they have, you know, the green markets that they have in Long Island. They're usually only 2 days. There's one in Riverhead they do every, I think it's Saturday and Sunday or whatever, seasonally. I guess it's more in the summer. But to have something like that on Long Island, I thought would be great. So if there's anybody out there who wants to invest $60, $70 million into a bad idea, you know, give me a call. I'll help you out. But it just seems to me that something like that, it's the one thing we don't have on Long Island here. We don't have a market like that. And I just think it'd be a fun thing to, you know, I guess you would have to rent out the stalls or whatever they do. I'd have to do a little more research on it, obviously. But I mean, how much fun would that be to be able to go into a place like that, a one-stop shopping for your cheese and your beef and your
fish? The Eataly thing was incredible, so I would assume that your thing would do well. But I think there was something that came to the marketplace near Roosevelt Field probably about 20 years
Eatsies. Ago. You're talking about Eatsies.
Yeah.
That was a whole different thing. You know, that was almost like, I don't know, I remember my partner at the time going, oh, this is going to be huge. You know, I know the one in Houston or whatever. I'm like, I don't know about that, man. You know, and, you know, Eatsies was, you know, they had a hero shop over here. They had a sushi thing. But, you know, they had sushi on the wall. And, you know, if it's got a green dot, it was made today. A red dot, it was made yesterday. I'm like, you know, there's a sushi place in every strip center on Long Island. Why are you going to go here? I'm not talking about that so much. I'm talking about like a, you know, a place where, you know, it's just fun. I mean, you know, there's plenty of restaurants in Philadelphia, but when I'm there, I always go to Terminal Market. There's a place there that sells just oyster stew, and, you know, I'll go there and have oysters for breakfast, you know, at like 11:30. I'll bowl it out and an oyster chowder or clam chowder or something like that. It's just fun. It's the atmosphere, too. Eatsies was more like a department store.
Gotcha.
You know?
So I had the occasion to have, you mentioned oysters Rockefeller the other day, and I thought it was too much.
You didn't like them?
Are you a oysters Rockefeller guy?
Yeah, I'm an oyster guy either way. I like them. You know, it's not my go-to, but yeah. I mean,
all I tasted was the spinach, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's what it is. It's spinach and pearl, you know.
But
did you get the licorice in there?
I didn't remember tasting that.
Yeah, that's the Pernod. It's usually Pernod. They use Sambuca now because nobody drinks Pernod anymore.
So as we approach St. Patrick's Day, I keep seeing, I guess on Cablevision, they have highlights of Uncle Giuseppe's in the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
And they made a corned beef and cabbage quesadilla.
here we go.
And then they had another thing, like you have potato tots.
Mm-hmm.
They had the same thing. It was, you know, minced up corned beef, cabbage. I guess it had cheese.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had that. I thought that was interesting that, you know, Italian market is busy.
Yeah, that chef.
Yeah.
I did that show once. You know, they used to have guest chefs on there all the time. Now they do it in-house. But what's her name? I can't think of the girl's name from Channel 12 there.
Lily, yeah.
Strasburg or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did I think it was a mahi a la lily or something. It was fun. I had a good time. You know, the guy who owns Uncle Giuseppe's is a member at the club that I'm at, you know.
Oh, yeah?
So I see him all the time.
Is that Tommy?
I can't remember his name. Well, good guy. And his wife's very nice, too. His wife's there more than he is. But, yeah, it was that was a fun show to do. But, yeah, I catch that all the time on Channel 12. They do some fun stuff.
So I thought it was interesting, these different, St. Patrick's Day things. So one of the things that I did down in Florida was go to a place called Pop Stroke, mm-hmm. which was a miniature golf course, but on steroids. Two different courses.
I've seen that.
It was part two, which I thought was really weird because I guess it's made to keep things moving along quickly. Big screens that have the leaderboard, because apparently you go on the app, and instead of having a scorecard, you're doing it. So it's electronic, so they actually put your name up
right,
there.
Right.
Waitress service at every hole.
Yeah.
So there's a QR code. You scan it. The waitress runs over and gets you your liquor. They're selling, buckets of beer and stuff.
Yeah, Tiger Woods is an investor.
Tiger Woods, I believe, and Justin Timberlake. But what's really cool is we have some sort of golf thing out east, Topgolf, which is just a driving range more.
Yeah, but they have different kind of games you can play there.
So this arrangement right outside of the West Palm Airport is Pop Stroke and Top Flight. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So much activity, but again, it was so much fun at Pop Stroke or whatever I said. And then there's a restaurant. They actually had this. I don't understand an omakase menu.
That's ambitious.
$1.35, and you got to be there at 6 o'clock or whatever.
Yeah.
But that's part of the adventure of the place. And then they had like bar food type options. But well done, actually.
Cool.
Just a lot of fun. So again, it was an adventurous week, to say the least.
Sounds like you had a good time.
I did.
Yeah, I got to get down here soon. Although now my between the airport and the TSA and all the other stuff, it's flying is an adventure.
It wasn't too bad. I know. It's funny you say that, because when I woke up this morning on News 12, they were talking about the TSA thing.
Yeah.
And there were going to be lines and lines and lines.
Wasn't bad.
At this moment, I did not experience that.
That's good. All right. Well, we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And we will see you next week.
Come on now, everybody. Get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Introducing Smoking Al's new fantasy platters. The whole gang can have fun feasting on each one of these enormous oversized platters, whether at home or in the dining room. Try the new Macho Nacho, the Bow Wow Wow, the Poo Poo Platter, the Caesar Pleaser, barbecue egg rolls, chicken wings, and a whole lot more. Smoking Al's, Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.